Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Well, the San Diego Comic-Con is over, and amongst the big headlines, I think a couple books might have flown under the radar. So here at Word Balloon, we're going to point out a few of these books that made their splash in San Diego and are going to be talked about in the late summer and early fall months ahead. Namely, Jeff Lemire's new book, Sweet Tooth. It comes out in September from Vertigo Comics. The first issue is only $1, and Jeff is here to give us a sneak preview of the book. We also talk about his current original graphic novel from Vertigo, The Nobody, and we talk a bit as well about Essex County. Jeff's trilogy of Top Cow books that have been collected into a trilogy omnibus. That edition made its debut at the San Diego Comic-Con and will be available this fall as well from Top Shelf. You'll want to check it out. Before we start our conversation with Jeff, a couple show notes. At the San Diego Comic-Con, the 2009 Eisner Awards were given out, and some friends of Word Balloon were winners. And I wanted to congratulate Andrew Peepoy for his win with Ian Boothby and Nina Matsumoto on Murder, He Wrote, which was one of the stories in The Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors, number 14. Congratulations to Matt Fraction and Salvador Loca for Invincible Iron Man, Best New Series. Congrats to Mike Mignola and Richard Corbin for Best Limited Series, Hellboy, The Crooked Man. Best Anthology, Rance Hosley and Tori Amos are enjoying their Eisner for Comic Book Tattoo. Congratulations to Bill Willingham for winning Best Writer for his work on Fables and House of Mystery. P. Craig Russell, who adapted Neil Gaiman's Coraline and won for Best Publication for Teens and Tweens. And Art Baltazar and Franco for Tiny Titans winning Best Publication for Kids. Congratulations to all of you. Well done. One quick show note. You might hear a little bit of a slight echo effect on my voice. It's because Jeff's phone line was a little low. And to bring up his volume, sometimes you'll hear the residue of my voice on his phone line as well as the microphone, and that's what's giving it that kind of phased, filtered effect. It's clear, and you can hear me fine. It's not perfect, though, and I just wanted to make you aware of that. Here's Jeff and I talking about some of our favorite books, including The Legion of Superheroes. But one thing we do share is a love for The Legion of Superheroes.
Yes, of course.
So that's very cool.
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge Alicia fan, so, yeah. As I think I heard you on a recent another podcast saying that you either went to the X-Men or you went to Legion, you know, and I was always the Teen Titans and Legion. I never really read Marvel stuff much as a kid at all. It was always DC for me, so.
Well, and I was fascinated by that. I was reading some interviews that you've done, and you've talked about being a big Bronze Age DC fan. Tell me some of these titles that were kind of, you know, here and gone and only a handful of issues when they first came out.
Oh, geez, I know. I got, like, I've been library binding a lot of my old comics.
Okay.
I library bounded, like, the special edition of all first issues of DC stuff that never, like, really lasted for more than, you know, three or four issues. I'll grab it. There's some great stuff, though.
Cool.
But, yeah, I'm a sucker for anything Bronze Age, really up to, like... Well, Crisis on Infinite Earths was sort of my big touchstone as a kid, so that's kind of my era of DC. But yeah, geez, I can't think of any of them offhand. You caught me off guard, but
problem, man. It's not a test. It's all right. It's a conversation.
You know, there was tons of like sword and sandal stuff that didn't last long, and you know. Yeah. Anyways.
So, did you like Claw?
Oh yeah, I like Claw. What was the other one? Arrak,
absolutely, sure.
Yeah, that was cool. Of course, Warlord.
I was going to say, I'm assuming you're a Warlord fan. There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I like that stuff. And, yeah, they tried, to, I think they bring more, isn't Mike Grell doing Warlord again?
He is, and they've got an artist, and I can't remember his name right now, but here, I've got it right in front of me. Hold on. I got the second issue here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Joe Prado.
Okay.
And yeah, Grell's doing the covers, but the interiors look very Grell-like.
Kind of a similar aesthetic or whatever.
Absolutely.
That's cool. Oh,
so yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't go wrong with Mike Grell writing Travis Morgan. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, I love that stuff. That was. I think they're doing a showcase too of all this.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it comes up this fall or something. So that's going to be fun.
Now, being a Vertigo guy, do you get DC stuff now too, or?
Well, if I get, I'm not like on a comp list or anything. But if I ask for certain things, I can usually pry them out of my editor's hands.
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean, I get all the showcase stuff because it's just, I mean, the stuff's invaluable just to have around as an artist. All that black and white artwork is just such a resource. So.
And it was fun to read that you were a big fan of guys like Alex Toth and Joe Kubert.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Kubert's my favorite.
Me too.
He's my touchstone. I think that there's no other artist who I can just... I just look at his stuff, and it just, it just makes me want to draw more and more. Every time I look at a panel that he's drawn, he's just, to me, he's the master, you know. And his career is just astounding. It spans the whole history of American comics, you know, and he's still, in my eye, he's still as strong now as he's ever been, which is amazing. So, yeah, I love all the stuff he did and is doing, and it's really cool to see him doing Wednesday Comics with one of his sons, too, so.
No, I completely agree, and I agree, too, that I think he's as strong today as he's ever been.
For sure, and that, you know, that rarely happens over the course of any artist's career. They always sort of have a peak and then a slow, you know, downturn, but he just seems to be as sharp as ever, you know. It's great.
Well, you know, and you've got this interesting cartoony style that is you know, definitely I see your indie roots, but I kind of see that, a little bit of a Kubert Faces. In a lot of your faces.
I think I kind of have a weird style in that it is, there is like a cartoony indie edge to it, but there's also, I think you really do see a lot of mainstream influences on it that a lot of other indie guys don't have, and a lot of European influences too, of guys like Munoz and Hugo Pratt and stuff like that. Just that really expressive sort of European style mixed with a kind of a weird indie style. So I don't know, people seem to respond well to it anyway, but definitely there's some Kubert in my faces for sure. I've looked at enough of them.
So who's editing you at Vertigo?
Well, when I started on The Nobody, and then actually with the first couple issues of Sweet Tooth, it was Bob Schreck.
Sure.
And then Bob unfortunately left DC, and now my editor is Bob's old assistant editor, Brandon Montclair.
Okay.
And he's awesome too. He's a really, really great guy, and we have a really good working relationship. So as much as I was sorry to see Bob go, it's still, you know, very much a strong relationship that I have up there. So it's good.
And I'm assuming Schreck brought you to Vertigo on the strength of Essex County?
Yeah, exactly. So I owe Bob a lot. He's one of the greatest guys I've ever met in the industry. He's just such a nice guy and so genuine and, you know, such a great eye for talent, obviously. So.
You took the words out of my mouth, man. That's what I was going to say. And that's great because... yeah, I think very much like the Brian Woods and a lot of the current new generation of Vertigo guys, Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
I think you're another interesting voice for the Vertigo team. And
I think my book's even a little bit left of center even for Vertigo, you know, just because it kind of has that. I'm kind of like labeled as an indie guy, even more so maybe than some of those guys were. So
sure,
it's gonna be interesting to see how the book does, obviously, but. I mean, I'm having a great time working with them and stuff, and just being a longtime DC and a longtime Vertigo fan, it's a thrill to be putting something out under that imprint, you know.
And Dean Haspiel, too, would be another guy, I think.
Yeah, I met Dean. He's awesome. And his graphic novel he did, The Alcoholic, that was great.
Oh, yeah, with Jonathan Ames, absolutely.
Yeah, I think he's doing another one now that I've heard about that sounds really amazing, too. So, yeah, they're really bringing in some interesting... Do you know Matt Kent?
I certainly do.
Yeah, he's doing a Vertigo graphic novel right now too.
Oh, terrific!
Yeah. So they've got some stuff that, you know, cooking that's pretty cool. So.
And you know, your style reminds me of Matt's.
Yeah, he's probably Matt's probably my best friend in comics.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, we don't live in the same city, obviously, but we both being Top Shelf kind of alumni, and we spent a lot of time together at cons. And Matt was just upstate with me a couple months ago, so yeah, we really. Really get along, and we have a lot of the same influences and a lot of the same, you know, loves in comics. And I think might be working on a couple little projects together in the next couple of years too. So that'll be fun.
Oh, that'll be terrific.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you both then at the Windy City show too in September.
Yeah, it's going to be fun too, hanging out with him there. So.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about The Nobody because
sure.
I'm a big Invisible Man fan. Not only the films, but. Have you seen that 1950s British TV show that they made?
No,
too?
I never even heard of it. No.
Oh man, you know they they used to show it on like the bad UHF channels here in Chicago,
really?
and they're starting to run them again. And
I'd really like to see that.
You know, Alan Moore makes reference to them in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's Black Dossier.
Oh, cool. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, so Peter, I want to say, and, you know, no offense to the Brady Bunch, but I think his name was Peter Brady or something.
Okay.
the character. But your guy is John Griffin, and as you say, that's kind of your template to you've got the basics of the story, and then certainly your story takes a different turn than the H.G. Wells story.
I mean, it's not, by no means is it an adaptation of the Wells novel. I mean, I love that novel, but for me it was more just taking that basic setup of the bandaged face stranger showing up in a small town, and I guess kind of use that and just go off and sort of do my own thing with it. But I mean, from the Essex County books, obviously I was always really interested in exploring sort of rural communities and small town life in my work and stuff. And after doing those books, I kind of wanted to do something a bit, I know, I guess a bit pulpier and a little bit darker. And, you know, I think I was actually reading the novel again just for fun around that time, and I just thought, it just kind of hit me that this would be a really fun way to kind of put this character in like an Essex County kind of setting, and instead of showing sort of like the connection of family over generations and things like that I did with Essex County, kind of show the opposite, how when something strange like that pops up in a small town, it can really bring out the small-mindedness and the claustrophobia and things like that. So it was kind of like a fun way of putting a twist on some of the past work I had done, and obviously it's just really fun to draw a bandaged face character. I, being a big Qbert fan, I couldn't resist.
Yeah, absolutely, the Unknown Soldier.
Yeah.
Well, and this is like if the Invisible Man were to like show up at Peyton Place, if it was a little more rural, and I mean, you're getting, you know, the dark secrets of the town and the dark secrets of the man, as well as
there's a lot of Twin Peaks in there, obviously. Too,
you bet.
And I'm a huge Lynch fan, so this is sort of my little love letter to Twin Peaks as well, and just, you know, it all mixes together into hopefully an interesting little thriller.
That was a lot of fun. Now, you know, I like how it's broken up chapter-wise, too. Was this supposed to be a monthly and then became a graphic novel?
No, that was just me having fun with the
chapter
pages. Yeah, I guess you're referring to what I did was each of the three chapter pages, I sort of recreate a different era of comics history as, like, you know, a fake comic book cover sort of featuring the Invisible Man. So, yeah, and I couldn't resist, since it was my first Vertigo book, kind of riffing on the old Swamp Thing covers for the third chapter with the sophisticated suspense heading and everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I love the romance cover as well.
Yeah, that one turned out well. That was actually, I gave the artwork from that page to Bob Schreck as a thank you. So he owns the romance cover somewhere.
Oh, that's really neat. Yeah, there's, you know, and I think this is the case with a lot of your stories, it seems. You really are kind of writing these love letters to comic books in general, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, even, you know, the Essex County stuff wasn't overtly, I guess, I mean, there is some slight superhero stuff going on with the one character, the kid who sort of is obsessed with being a superhero and wearing the cape and stuff like that, but they're all sort of, you know, that I just kind of, like, write books about things that I love, you know, like, Essex County is about hockey and superheroes, and the Nobody's about the Unknown Soldier and H.G. Wells, you know, I just sort of filter it through some of my own experiences, and I don't know, it seems to be, people seem to be connecting to it, and I certainly enjoy doing that. So.
Well, The Nobody came out last week, and it's a very interesting graphic novel, and I recommend it, and it's a lot of fun, and, you know, it's a good way to suck people in to an indie story, because, you know, I got to be honest, there are guys like Matt Kent and Jeffrey Brown and guys like that whose work I really admire, but there is so much, like there is so much superhero independent work going on, the same can be said for the art books as well.
Yeah.
And it's tough to find the good stuff, you know? And
there's, you know, just like mainstream stuff, just like anything, there's so much coming out now that, you know, some of it's good, some of it's great, and a lot of it's not very good.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you have to find an endpoint and kind of find a few artists you like and then sort of go from there, you know? It's just like, first time you listen to classical music or jazz or something, you don't, it all sounds the same until you start connecting with a few artists or something, right? So, yeah, hopefully these Vertigo books might be a way to turn a few people who haven't really read some of my stuff before or Matt's stuff, you know, onto some other stuff as well. So.
Well, you know, for you, Volume 2 of Essex County with that great shot of the brothers in their hockey sweaters, I mean, that to me really was this kind of very iconic-looking thing that did catch my eye when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, that was, as we already talked about, I'm a huge hockey guy, and growing up Canadian and everything, I've always played hockey, and I still play now, and, you know, I just really wanted to tell a great hockey story, and to my mind, there hadn't been the great, you know, hockey graphic novel yet, so I kind of set out to try to make it. I don't know if it'll stand the test of time as that, but I did my best anyway.
Have any NHL people like run across Essex County at all?
I haven't. I haven't heard from any NHL people or hockey people.
Well, that's
really
too
in general.
Bad.
Yeah, I tried sending it out to a few, some of the hockey press and stuff like that here, but I just didn't really get much much feedback. I think it's just such a different world, you know, the sports world and the comics world don't generally connect.
True.
Yeah.
I met Catherine Emerman a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, we got to talk a little bit more after our first meeting at the FX convention. But we were talking, I can't remember the name of this show, but there's, like, definitely a show for, you know, people in their teens and 20s. And it's the guy reminded me of, like, a Canadian Jon Stewart. And I can't remember the name of the show.
Oh, yeah, Strombolopoulos.
Yes! And what's the name of that show?
The Hour.
The Hour, yes. And I saw Don Cherry being interviewed.
Yeah, that guy, the host of that show, actually plays hockey in the same league as I do right now.
So. No way!
Yeah, I play in a league here in Toronto that's mostly artists, musicians, actors, and visual artists and stuff, all in this big hockey league downtown. It's really a lot of fun. So there's a lot of sort of Canadian music and TV sort of quasi-celebrities.
Is he a good guy?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Cool. Well,
he's
you know,
paid, but he's good.
I saw him. this seems to be true, man. I got to tell you, a lot of friendly people in your country. But the interviews I saw him do were I saw him talk to Don Cherry, and that was great. And it's on YouTube, by the way. If you're looking for it, it's called The Hour. And if you look for The Hour, Don Cherry, you'll find it. And what's his name, the host?
George Strombolopoulos.
There you go. Good, great
guy. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I also saw him interview Dave Thomas.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And, yeah, they were fantastic. It was really interesting. And, I am a huge Canadian comedy fan. So
it's the best stuff.
Truly.
All SCTV. I mean, it's
just, absolutely. And The Newsroom, man.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Love Ken Finkelman. That guy's a genius. I'm a big fan of that dude's. And that show was outstanding. One of my favorites.
Yeah, totally underrated, too. I didn't know that if it got over the States at all or not. But
well, thank God for public television, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that's really all right. Cool. That's even more exciting. Fantastic. Well, I'm always curious. Now, Catherine told me about Made in Canada, so give me.
I vaguely remember it. Yeah.
Okay. Again, it's on YouTube, so check that out. But give me a piece of Canadian comedy that maybe hasn't filtered down here that I should look for.
I don't know. I got nothing. That's all. That's all we had. It ended after Kids in the Hall.
Really? Nothing's been going on since then?
No, there
I'm
might
sorry.
Be. I just, you know, I haven't really come across anything in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years that's been that good, that's for sure.
I did like
stuff out there. But.
I did like Finkelman's other show, More Tears, as well.
Yeah, see, I didn't see that one either.
Oh, man, that was really
Newsroom.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the Newsroom's fantastic, and I know there's been a few seasons of that, so.
Yeah.
You know, and I know they're on DVD, too, so check them out. And, of course, then, on the drama side, big fan of Da Vinci's Inquest. And
yeah, that was a cool show. Yeah. See, we usually make fun of all the Canadian shows here. And we just watch American stuff. So there hasn't, I don't know, traditionally Canadian dramas and stuff are so terrible. I shouldn't say that. But they've gotten a lot better in the last maybe 5 or 10 years. But I grew up just watching American television. I lived in, Essex County is, Windsor is right across from Detroit, so I just got all the Detroit stations and stuff. I hardly watched any Canadian, you know, television at all as a kid. So.
Well, there's that one episode of SCTV where they kind of really make fun of the CBC for the entire 90 minutes. And I just bought a bunch of the old DVDs, and I hadn't seen it in, like, literally 25 years, but it was cracking me up because...
I know.
Oh, yeah. So, but, you know, like I said, Da Vinci's Inquest, Newsroom, Kids in the Hall, I mean, you know, things are getting better. The Hour, I mean, there's some good stuff out there.
Yeah, you know, there's always something good. There's always one good show, you know, 24 hours of programming, there's one good hour.
Well, you know, honestly, man, and I can understand a little bit of love for American television, but I think when you're, you know, immersed in it, sometimes you get sick of it, too, so.
Yeah. Well, we have Hockey Night in Canada, that's all I care about.
There you go.
Yeah. That's all I ever watched. Anyway.
So Sweet Tooth is out this week.
Sweet Tooth is out in September.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you're giving me this nice little preview.
Yeah.
All right, well, then we'll be very careful about what we talk about.
Okay.
So tell me as much as you'd like to entice people. It's coming out in September. What would you like people to know about Sweet Tooth?
Well, I mean, the first issue, like I said, September, and like Greek Street and The Unwritten, it's also going to be a $1 first issue.
Excellent.
It's really awesome. So, it's just me. I'm doing writing, drawing, and inking, and Jose Villarubia is coloring me. So it looks fantastic, and I guess the basic setup is sort of a post-apocalyptic action-adventure story, and it starts off with this little kid.
Gus.
Gus, he's born in total seclusion in this wooded sort of area, and he has antlers and sort of deer-like features, and he lives with his father, and basically his father has just told him that outside of the woods, it's just, there's nothing. It's just like this horrible place. They have to just stay there. And this kid doesn't know anything. You know, he has no perspective on the world at large at all. And then in our first issue, kind of for reasons I don't want to reveal, he's finally forced to leave the woods. And what he finds is that basically North America has just been devastated by a mysterious pandemic, and 90% of the population is gone. And also, like, there have been no children born since the pandemic hit about a decade ago, except for these weird animal-human hybrid children, like him. This is sounding very complicated. I should just say Mad Max meets Bambi. That's what they tell me to say.
And there were a lot of images that evoke some special scenes of Bambi.
Purposely, and that gets more so as it goes. But, basically the idea is it's this little kid with antlers, and he teams up with this big hulking bounty hunter who promises to take him to a safe place for all these animal kids, and it's just sort of their road trip across this post-apocalyptic world together, and trying to solve the mystery of this disease and how these animal children play a role in possibly curing it and things like that. So,
wow, man. Well, that's...
Yeah, I don't know how I came up with that.
Yeah, I was going to ask, man. First of all, like, yeah, no happy stories?
Yeah, oh, come on. What's the fun with that? You know
this
what, actually,
true.
I do kind of know how I came up with that story, and I always forget this, is that when I was working on The Nobody, I was trying to think of some more stuff to pitch to Vertigo after, and one of my favorite DC comics ever was Commandy, and I was trying to think of how, if I could, like, redo Commandy, how would I do it, and this isn't that, but this, the sort of the germ of that idea came from me trying to think of a way that I would redo Commandy, with, like, so you can kind of see that in it, The Last Boy on Earth and the animal hybrids and stuff sort of blended into this other thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I'm a big Commandy fan, and just I love post-apocalyptic fiction in general. You know, I love, Mad Max and Cormac McCarthy's The Road. And,
sure.
I was a big, big fan as a kid of Tim Truman's Scout series. I'm
absolutely.
Oh, I loved that book.
Yep.
I still love it. But so it's just me, again, just taking all this kind of stuff I love and just, just trying to tell a really good, mysterious action-adventure story with, you know, hopefully with still those kind of quiet human moments that people sort of seem to like in my other work. So, yeah.
What?
And it's a, you know, ongoing series, which is sort of daunting, but also really exciting. And yeah, I'm well underway. I think I'm starting issue 7 tomorrow, so I'm way ahead of schedule on it, which is cool. And Jose's colors look amazing. First time that my art's been colored.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because...
Sure.
Tell me, you know, is it a big leap to then think about things? Because I like the style of your books, and especially it's reflected to in Nobody as well, where it's black and white with one other prime color.
Yeah, it was a really different thing for me. To be honest, when I was drawing the first maybe 2 or 3 issues, I hadn't seen any of the colors. You know, he hadn't colored anything yet, so I was just kind of really just drawing the way I would normally draw if I was, you know, it was going to be printed in black and white.
Sure.
So, there are some instances where I'm adding a lot of textures in my line work and things to, you know, to differentiate background from foreground and things like that, where I probably didn't need to do as much because Jose would do that work with the color. But until I started to see that, I didn't really, you know, I wasn't really thinking differently. But now that I'm kind of into the second story arc and I've seen sort of what he does, there are definitely instances where I can kind of leave things for him to, you know, for him to do.
Okay.
So, and, it's cool because obviously doing a monthly book is pretty time-consuming at the best of times, but when you're writing and drawing and inking it, you know, if I can if I can find ways to leave things for Jose to do it, and I know he always does something really beautiful, then it really helps me out. So.
Are you scripting and then drawing, or how does that work?
Yeah, I script. I script pretty far ahead. I wrote almost both the first two arcs before I started drawing anything. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I just do a full script, and I work the same way anyone else would work at Vertigo, through, you know, the script first, then pencils, then inks, but I'm just fortunate enough to get to do it all myself, so I can take a few shortcuts here and there.
Looking at both the Nobody and Sweet Tooth, the faces that you come up with for some of these characters, they do. They have the, you know, I mean, are these faces you've encountered through your life, or, I mean, are you going through magazines, or, you know?
No, I don't know. I don't use any photo reference or, you know, in general when I'm drawing or things like that. It usually just kind of comes from, I try to draw from my imagination, because most of my favorite artists and cartoonists are those kind of people who, you know, just draw things from their imagination more. And I guess those faces, they must be from people I've seen in my life, but if they are, I'm not consciously really aware of it. It just kind of come up, to be honest with you.
Sure.
Sometimes certain things, if they just work, you don't really think about them too much. And like character designs and these, you know, creating interesting looking characters is something that seems to be one of my strengths, so I just go with it.
Because even the bounty hunter, Jeopard, I mean, he kind of, you know, yeah, I was trying to kind of place his look, and at times he kind of reminded me of almost like a Doc Savage kind of big,
yeah,
giant, powerful dude.
Yeah, he's my archetypal sort of badass character.
Okay.
he's a bit of the Punisher, a bit of, one of those cool pulpy characters like Doc Savage.
Absolutely.
Or the Avenger. You know, the white hair like the Avenger. I don't know, do you remember the Avenger?
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, I was a big fan when I was working on the pitch and stuff for Sweet Tooth. I was really into Garth Ennis's Punisher Max series, so there's a lot of Punisher in Jeffrey, which
Very
is kind of cool. Yeah, so he's just my big badass guy. You know, it's fun to draw him killing and kicking people's asses. Because they usually don't get to draw stuff like that. So drawing fight scenes and things has been a lot of fun. So.
That's cool. And it's interesting to hear that you're obviously, you are a pulp fan, because it seems to me, I think, you know, you're probably just over, you know, 10 years younger than me, and I'm always interested when I find guys younger that, you know, are hip to the pulps, because it seems like there's a disconnect.
Well, I kind of came to it, you know, I probably, like a lot of people my age, you kind of come to that stuff through the things that were influenced by it, obviously, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And, but yeah, I mean, the character of Doc Savage for inches. Specifically, I've always been really I've always loved that character design and stuff too, and you know, the Shadow, obviously, and I used to love all those old I guess they're not that old, but the was it Kyle Baker and that was
and Andrew Heffler and Kyle Baker
was,
certainly.
I love that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all that pulp stuff is just, you know, the more superhero comics you read and stuff, the more you sort of get into the history of it, eventually it leads you back to those guys. So
Now, obviously, you mentioned you're a fan of Commandy. What did you think of the Wednesday comics that started up?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
it was amazing. Yeah, I have no complaints, and the whole thing was terrific. And I think, actually, the Commandy one was Commandy was really good, but the one that kind of surprised me the most and sort of stole the show for me was the Dead Man one. I really liked the Dead Man one.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Absolutely, and I was a big Adam Serengia fan as well.
Yeah.
I thought Paul, and I wasn't expecting that style from Paul Pope, but it was very
and,
cool.
And Jose Villarubia, my colorist, colored the Pope one.
Excellent.
I think he kind of recreated the original, I think it was 12 or 16 color template that they had back when they were printing newspaper strips.
Oh, wow.
And that's all he used for that. It's really cool. So.
That is really cool.
Yeah, he did an awesome job on that.
Do they have, you know, newspapers by you, do they have adventure strips at all still in the comics?
No, not here at all.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, same down here, too.
Yeah, it's too bad. But, yeah, even when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of the adventure stuff left. It was mostly, like, you know, funny animal stuff.
Sure. You know, it's crazy. Gary Gianni, who's a Chicagoan, and he's taken over the Prince Valiant strip, And it drives me crazy because I have to go online to read his stuff or wait until it's collected because, none of the Chicago papers run it. And, God, what the Tribune's done with Dick Tracy, I hate to say. I mean, it's been a long time since Max Collins was, kicking ass on it and stuff. Yeah. So, unfortunately, a lot of those adventure strips aren't what they used to be. So, Wednesday Comics really was this, nice Valentine to time gone by.
Yeah, it was so fun. And I just hope when they collect it, they don't put all 12 chapters of each story together. I hope they keep them separated the way we're reading them as they come out week from week. I think that's a really cool kind of experience to read it that way. And it's great. I mean, DC, as far as I'm concerned, they stole the show this summer with that. I don't care what other events or anything else that come out. That's definitely the book, you know.
Yeah, and I think they're going to feel the love at San Diego and all the other cons as the summer and fall go on.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be convention-wise?
I'm doing San Diego in, I guess it's like a week now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a big show because I got, The Nobody just came out, so I'll be signing at Vertigo all weekend. And then the sort of omnibus edition of the Essex County stuff is debuting at that show as well. So I'll be at the Top Shelf booth most of the time signing those. And so that'll be great.
Let's talk about the omnibus. Now, is that in color, too? Is that
No, that's just going to be black and white.
But you sent me the cover, the color cover, which looks very impressive.
Yeah, the color. Actually, Matt Kent designed the cover.
So very cool.
Yeah. So, it's 512 pages.
Wow.
So it's got all three of the original books, plus, I think, 60, my math might be off, I think 50 or 60 pages of new stuff in there.
Oh, excellent.
A couple short stories that I had done as mini-comics, and whole bunch of sketchbook stuff and developmental stuff and promotional art and things like that hadn't seen the light of day before. So it really is sort of everything I've done in that world of Essex County, and there'll be a hardcover and a softcover version. So.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, and that's nice for people to get both the hardcover if they wanted or a more affordable version as well, and get the whole story and more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's going to be. It's going to ship to comic shops and stuff in late August or early September, but we're going to have, I think, 100 or 200 copies with us at San Diego. So.
Well, much like Bob Schreck, Chris Staros is another guy who has always had a very good eye for talent. And
Chris is he's the best. You know, those Top Shelf guys are like family to me and stuff. And I wouldn't have a career in comics if it wasn't for Chris and Brett Warnock taking a chance on me when I sent them the first Essex County book and stuff, so... I'll always work with those guys,
Well, and I don't blame you. I had no idea at first, and it took, I forget who said it, but, I think it was Kevin O'Neill when I was talking to him. He reminded me that Chris, in the pre-internet days, had this great comic newsletter, the Star Wars Report.
I know.
Completely forgot about that, but it was awesome. It was this thing.
I know, it was really cool, and, he was a guy who, actually, he didn't grow up reading comics at all. I think he kind of stumbled upon them in his 30s or maybe late 20s or something, and it just, blew his mind. I think he told me once V for Vendetta was the first comic he read, and it just, opened his eyes completely. And then, it's so funny that now they're Alan Moore's publisher.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's really cool.
That's excellent. And, it's, are you able then with your contract, are you going to be able to then continue to work for Chris as well?
Yeah, I'm not exclusive to Vertigo at all, so I'm... As far as I know, I'm working on another book for Top Shelf as I'm working on Sweet Tooth, so I don't know when it'll be done. Sweet Tooth deadlines usually have to come first, but
sure.
Probably in a year or two I'll be done that, so.
Well, excellent. Well, The Nobody is out for now, and people should definitely go check it out. And then, as you say, you'll be in San Diego with preview copies of The Omnibus for Essex County.
Yep.
And then coming in September, we'll start Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, and I got a couple other little things. I got Dark Horse doing an anthology called Noir. I don't know if you've heard of that. But I got, a 10-page story in that.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, there's a bunch of great people in it. Brew Baker's in it. Azzarello's in it. All the great sort of modern crime writers are in it. And for some reason, me. And... what else do I got? Oh, I'm doing an issue of House of Mystery at Vertigo.
Oh, very cool.
I think it's 18 or 19. I can't remember. But, yeah, so that'll be coming up this fall.
Are you drawing it as well as writing it? Or
just drawing, yeah.
Okay.
Matt Sturgis is, as far as I know, writing the script. I haven't got the script yet. So, that's really fun. And a couple other, there is another DC thing coming, but I don't know if they're going to talk about it at San Diego or not, but I can't say it yet.
So no problem.
It will, I think it is DCU, not Vertigo, as far as I know.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, all right, now, barring that, are there any DC properties that you'd love to get your hands on if there were no barriers?
I always just say the same thing, and it's Doom Patrol.
Cool.
I want them bad, but, you know, I guess Keith Giffen has them right now, so I'll read his book instead for a while. But I love that. I love the original Arnold Drake and Primiani. He's an underrated Silver Age artist too. And
How do you say Bruno's name again? What is it?
I don't even know. Primiani.
Yeah, I think Primiani. Yeah. Okay, that sounds right.
I love that stuff.
That's me too, man.
Incredible.
You know? I just got the showcase of that.
Yeah. So I'd love to get my hands on them, and I mean, obviously, I like Commandy, but and what else? Jeez, I don't know. Those are the ones that always come to mind. For some reason, I want Doom Patrol. I like the sad freaks. You know?
Sure. Well, you know, and I'm curious to see what they do with Commandy after everything that happened in 52.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's such a great story. It seems like the Wednesday Comics one is just sort of almost retelling the original Kirby stuff, too, which I don't have a problem with.
But, no. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, another great Kirby thing that I got from the 70s... I just bought that Losers collection.
Yeah, I don't have that one yet. I just got the Demon one, which I'm really
very
looking
forward
to. Yeah, so I love all Kirby's DC 70 stuff. I think it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, even those handful of issues he did of The Avenger, too.
Oh, yeah, I just got those off eBay, actually, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I always find it's interesting. I never have a problem finding those in dollar bins
at
shows, and that's fine with me. And, I snagged them right away, and so I hope you didn't have to pay too much for them.
No, I got them for nothing, too. And they had great Joe Kubert covers, so there you go.
That's cool. Hey, now tell me, as someone who lives up in Canada, So how much are single issues now? Because, you know, we're going crazy down here because they're $4. How much are they now in Canadian dollars?
There was a weird period where our dollar was worth more than the American dollar. I think last winter or something.
Yeah.
So it actually evened out for the first time since I've been reading comics, where it was just one price on the cover for a while.
Okay.
But now I think it's back to, I think it's, there's still a bit of a difference, but it's not as, it might only be about, you know, 50 cents more than,
okay.
You guys are paying. So, yeah, it's not as it used to be, like a dollar more or something.
Yeah.
I don't think it's quite that much now.
Is, you know, and too, you know, you're one of those guys that I think came up through mini comics and stuff. Did you do much as far as online comics before you start getting your stuff published?
Yeah. I never really did a lot of, like, I did a couple mini comics and I just sort of photocopied them and sold them around here and stuff. But I never really did anything online, per se. I didn't actually have a computer until a couple of years ago. So
okay.
I'm late coming to all that stuff. But the first book I did that actually got published was, I don't know, do you know the Xerico Award? The Xerico
Grant? Absolutely, yes.
I got one of those, and I did a graphic novel called Boss Dogs. And
tell people about the Xerico Award, because I think that's a really neat
fantastic.
Thing.
It's Peter Laird, one of the two creators of the Ninja Turtles. I think he has this foundation where twice a year he gives out 5 grants to first-time, like, up-and-coming comic self-publishers. And, you know, it was thankfully open to Canadian and American residents, because at the time I was, you know, there was no way I had the money to print my own book or anything, right?
Okay.
So I got one of those for this graphic novel, and that really, really helped, you know, Top Shelf take my stuff a bit more seriously, just seeing something that was already published. And so that was really my first step into comics, so it really did.
Do they help you get distribution? Is that what happens?
Yeah, I mean, they don't, you do it all yourself. That's kind of part of the grant. You have to show them in your proposal that you know, that you understand the direct market system and that you're going to be able to get it picked up by Diamond and everything. But generally, I think Diamond has sort of an understanding where if you've won the Xerico Award, they'll pick up the book, you know.
So okay.
Which, you know, Diamond doesn't pick everything up, so it's sort of that's sort of like your first foot in the door, and then you get that out, and, you know, I mean, I only sold, you know, 700 copies or something of the thing, but at least I had something printed that I could show.
Absolutely.
You know, so
well, and as you say, too, having a Xerico Award, I mean, I'm sure the rest of the industry is aware of that, and they're at least going to give you a second look.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just, they'll actually look at something if you send it to them. You
sure.
Know? Well, yeah, so it really was my fourth. You know, it really did launch my career, and in a weird way. So it's, yeah, it's great. I think anyone out there who's...
What's it called?
Zurich.
I was going to say, what's the name of your graphic album that you did?
Oh, it was called Lost Dogs. It was the first book I did. It's out of print now, so...
Okay.
But I think I'm actually going to... Top Shelf has a new like webcomic site that I'm gonna put it up there just so it's still sort of out there.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
And did Essex County win a Schuster Award? Is that?
Yes, I did. I won last year. I won the Schuster Award for best. I think it was best cartoonist or something that I won.
Very cool.
So yeah, it was cool. And I was nominated against Darwin Cook, who's one of my heroes, obviously. And he was so great, nice to me after I won the award, and I really kind of. Hit it off with him, and he did the introduction to the collected Essex County for me. So there's a 2-page Darwin Cook introduction to in the omnibus.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So.
And I lost my thought. Oh yes, I was going to say. Now it's funny you said you just recently bought a computer because I was reading an old interview of yours when someone asked you if it was tough to get started in the morning or do you have to answer email and Twitter or whatever, and you said I'll never Twitter.
Yeah.
And I know you just joined.
I did. Brett, one of my two publishers at the Top Shelf, he was down here like a month ago, and I was ranting about how I'll never join Twitter and all this stuff. And then like a week later, I was on it. I just thought it might be a good way to promote my stuff or something, so I'm kind of checking it out. I still haven't decided if I like it or not.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, I was glad to see you there. And believe me, I know what you mean. Facebook has been like that for me.
Yeah, I swore that off too. But
well, you see, you're smarter than me because yeah, it's the high school reunion that never ends.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to see anyone I knew before I was 18, ever, except my parents.
I understand.
And even them at times, it's like you know.
Well, that's all right. Oh no, it was and honestly, I was like very surprised and happy. I'm like, oh, that's nice. Jeff Lemire wanted to follow me on Twitter. I'm like, oh, that's a good opportunity to say hello. So you see, it worked out. This was nice.
Yeah, it did. It worked out. It launched our interview. So there you go. It was worth it.
Absolutely, man. No, honestly, man, continued success because The Nobody is excellent, and you were kind enough to give me a preview of Sweet Tooth and give me the first couple chapters, and I'm caught up and await its debut. And congratulations, too, on being part of Vertigo and their right move of making these first issues reasonable because I picked up Greek Streets. I was going to do it anyway just because I love Peter Milligan.
Yeah.
But that's a great way to suck people in and let people know, hey, this is a book that's worth your attention and give them, the first pop at a reasonable rate.
Totally, yeah. It's really, I'm so happy that they're doing that this year. It is. It's just such a great way to get people hooked on a book they otherwise wouldn't. It's such a tough marketplace now. There's so many books coming out every week and for a new property to be launched that isn't, you know, a recognizable character, it's so tough. So, hopefully it helps get a little bit of a foothold anyway. We'll see.
Well, I hope the momentum continues for you this summer with The Nobody, and we'll talk again in the fall at the Windy City Show, and we'll do a little video, and we'll talk a little bit more about Sweet Tooth at that point.
Sounds great, John.
That's Jeff Lemire. Make sure you check out The Nobody from Vertigo. The original graphic novel is available to order. And coming in September, Jeff starts Sweet Tooth with a dollar issue for number one through Vertigo Comics. And also coming later in the summer, the Essex County Trilogy, available from Top Shelf. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you to look for Word Balloon all over the internet. We're, of course, at our website, wordballoon.com, where you'll find our archive of well over 200 interviews with comic creators, writers, artists, filmmakers, screenwriters, directors. They're all there waiting for you, wordballoon.com. You'll find our forums there as well. Make sure if you have any questions or comments about the show, to leave me a post there, or you can email me, john@wordballoon.com. In future episodes of Word Balloon, we'll continue to examine some of the big announcements that were made at San Diego as they go on to the smaller circuit of conventions, including the Chicago Comic-Con in August and the Windy City Comic-Con in September. We'll bring you coverage of those conventions, including video reports, and you will be able to find those at our website, wordballoon.com. Make sure you check them out. There's already a preview of the Windy City Comic-Con posted at wordballoon.com. Make sure you go check that out for all the details. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.